Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to another episode of the Schmozone podcast. This is episode number 57. I'm Helen Yee with Helen Yee Sports. And as always, I'm being joined by the one and only...
David Schmolensen.
A.K.A.
The Schmo.
So we are here... in Philadelphia, another week traveling on the road doing another podcast, which is probably why I decided to take the mic again, right?
Helen, I don't even know what city we're in. We are going all over the place. New location, new week, another podcast, another road show, but the podcast is another week, podcast studio is another week closer to being done, and I can't wait to settle home.
I know. I can't wait to let you guys in on... everything that's kind of going down, but hopefully within, I would say, the next few weeks, it should be ready, right?
I mean, that's what this March month, my birthday month, we are building. We will get it all set. And then by April, things will be completely under swing. But hey, we could even start this month in March too. I just like the progression, Helen. I love the progression.
Yes, as long as you're always moving forward, no matter what speed. But David's not listening right now. His birthday is March 13th, so wish him a happy birthday, or the Schmo.
I appreciate that. I guess that's next week. It's crazy. That means that we've been going through this circus of a world we've been living in through a year now with the craziness. I can't believe it's been a full year we're approaching. But craziness there. But hey, let's talk about the positive here. We're in Philadelphia.
I know. It's been a crazy, not even 24 hours that we've been here.
And the reason why we waited to do this podcast is because we knew we were coming to Philadelphia to interview our guest today, the Underground King, Eddie Alvarez, an OG, a legend of the sport. Don't worry, we're heading back to Vegas. We will be there at UFC 259 cage side to watch it all go down. But we just made a little pit stop midweek.
Yeah, so basically to give you guys a behind-the-scenes look at kind of what happened today and our very eventful day, we went to go interview Eddie Alvarez. So you interviewed him as the Schmo. I interviewed him as myself, of course. And then after the interview for the podcast, he kind of wanted to do something a bit different and asked us a couple questions about ourselves behind the scenes.
Yeah, you know, Eddie's a great guy. There's a lot that goes on to these interviews before them, what we just show you on the camera is the Schmo or Helen and stuff like that. Like, we wouldn't be able to interview these athletes if we weren't able to build a good rapport with them. So we built a pretty good rapport with Eddie over the years, and he wanted to go on the podcast and start off just asking us some questions. So that's how the podcast starts off. And we do have great full interviews with him also. Helen does, the Schmo does. Check those out as well. But Eddie's just such a great dude. And the guy's been in this sport for, what, 17 years? So much to say, so much insight. Fought all the who's who's, especially in the lightweight division, who's competing and relevant now. The Justin Gaethjes, the Dustin Poiriers, the Conor McGregors.
Michael Chandler.
Michael Chandler, RDA. He's fought them all.
Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, so he's the who's
who. The list goes on.
Yeah.
So we don't want to reveal too much about what went on in his interviews with us individually, as well as this podcast, because they are all completely different. But what I will reveal is what happens even after we film the podcast.
Yes, we'll get to the behind the scenes in a second. Let's talk about the sponsors, though. Yeah. Let's talk about it. Let's start off with this. I wear it. I'm wearing it right now, and it's actually right here because this is the couch in our hotel room.
If you're
Sheath underwear, I've been talking about them a lot. The most comfortable underwear in the world. And since I have my used underwear here, I might as well show you. This right here, this is the game changer. This is the dual pouch right here. This separates the balls and the shaft. Your life will never be the same. Don't worry, there's no stains. I checked. So, This is super comfortable. Nice little fun design here. Sheath underwear. Use the promo code SCHMO. Get 20% off at checkout at sheathunderwear.com. You will not be disappointed. And the other sponsor for today's show is Fusion CBD Products. The best CBD products in the world. Love using their stuff. The CBD gummies, my necessity for traveling right here.
I know, took them before you got on the plane, right?
Yes, of course. Relax you. Loved their sleep stuff as well. Their CBD sports water, didn't bring it because you cannot bring water through TSA and it was carry on. But check them out, fusioncbdproducts.com. Use the promo code SCHMO to also get 20% off there. You won't be disappointed. So that's a little housekeeping there. Behind the scenes story, are you going to talk about our Uber driver? Our Uber driver.
That's never happened, at least in my lifetime. I don't know about you guys out there listening or watching right now, but it was really strange.
So Eddie gave us a great recommendation for lunch. Yes. And so we take an Uber there. Where we go to lunch, by the way?
Gall and Company Malt House.
Great, great sandwich. Steak, Philly steak, cheesesteak. Amazing. On the way there, our Uber driver literally had to pick up a call because he was talking to us mid-conversation. Hold yourself together, Helen. And he literally had a job interview on the ride. They called him. He took the call, and it didn't press the phone to the air. It was Bluetooth, so you could hear it through the speaker.
He's like, sorry, guys. I need
to take the call. Yeah, before he even answered the call, he's like, guys, I need to take this call. I need to take this call. So our Uber driver answers the call. It's on Bluetooth. It's blasting on speaker. He's getting a full-blown job interview. They're literally asking him what his salary expectations are. Literally, all the personal stuff. He's answering it right in front of us. Meanwhile, we're going to this lunch spot, the neighborhoods of Philly, our first time here. Everything looks the same. The guy gets lost on a one-way street. There's construction. We have to wait an extra 10, 15 minutes. Then he's literally backing up on this one-way street, literally probably 600 feet at least, while doing this interview, talking about his background information, about
and what position title he wants.
Oh, it's talking about the title he wants, because I don't know if he was talking to someone who was like one of those brokers that put you in job placement, one of those firms.
Or was it the HR person?
It was an HR person. I don't know. I mean, we work for ourselves. Corporate America. I haven't been in that in a couple of years. But whoever was doing this job interview with him must have been thinking, what is going on with this guy? He sounds distracted. You could hear the construction going on, the map in the background telling him he was not on par for the Uber ride. What an experience, by the way. Job interview while taking us to the restaurant. Great restaurant we ate at, by the way.
Oh, it was amazing. Shout out to that restaurant. And there basically was like a Philly cheesesteak, like a twist on a Philly cheesesteak, and their buffalo cauliflower wings. Amazing. But last thing I want to add about their the Uber driver. When he first picked us up, we try to put our camera gear in the trunk. Do you want to take it away?
There was just nothing. You couldn't do anything.
It was filled like to the brim.
Tools, tool chests and stuff like that.
And then he was like, oh, you know, I could put a towel because it was like filthy. And, you know, we have camera equipment. So then I'm like, oh, we'll put it in the front seat. I walk over and I look through the window, filled to the brim on the front seat.
Well, to his defense, he says he does this part-time. I can understand. He's looking for a full-time job. That's why he's doing the job interview. But it's all good. You know, look, you know, to each their own. Got us there safely. 5-star review. Doesn't matter.
Don't worry. We tipped him and we wish him well. Hopefully he does get that job. And I'm just laughing because it was a wild experience. Like, never in my life did I think I would be in a car with someone I just met for 5 minutes and listen to their entire job interview. And it was like you had to be there to witness.
You did. But it was a great experience. Great interview with Eddie. We'll get to that shortly. Let's talk a little UFC 259, right?
Of course.
Why not?
Triple header, right? 3 title fights going down on the line. The main event. Who doesn't who isn't anticipating Israel's move to that 205-pound division, fighting the current champ, Jan Blachowicz, and then Pewter Jan, Aljamain Sterling.
And got to interview Pewter Jan right before we left for Philadelphia Monday night. Great interview. His English has improved. Syed, his translator, he's the man. That guy could speak like four or five different languages.
He speaks Mandarin too. I was so impressed.
He is a great translator, and it's so good because when you're talking to Pewter as the schmo, there's the language barrier. But with a guy like Syed who understands the shtick, I can speak longer and I can exaggerate more. So it's not like I have to dumb down the questions or water it down or whatever, because Syed, however he chooses to convey it to Pewter, it's going to be worthwhile.
Well, what I do notice is you actually really enjoy those interviews with the translator.
Yes, because in that type of situation, you know, I have to embrace the translator, or the translator has to embrace the gimmick. It has to embrace the schmo, and I just get a little kick out of how they're conveying the message. I might not understand what they're saying. Obviously, I don't. I don't speak Russian, but I could understand the body language and different little pickups and social cues from the language. Like, if he's only saying like six things and I just spent like, you know, 3 minutes explaining something, you know he's dumbing it down. But if he's taking the time and he's, you know, showing him and just watching the facial mannerisms, I just get a kick out of all of it.
Yeah, well, that is a great interview up on this channel right now, your YouTube channel, and I'm hoping to do another interview in Mandarin with Song Yadong, who fights Kyler Phillips. And also Islam, he fights Drew Dober.
It's crazy. Thiago Santos against Rakic. I mean, there, this fight card is loaded. Dominic Cruz.
Yes, Casey Kenny.
I'm really excited. Amanda Nunes is fighting too.
Megan
Anderson defending the title at 145. Do they have rankings yet for featherweight at 145? I've been waiting for over a year on that.
I know. I thought you were going to ask Dana.
I've asked Dana.
You have actually. I asked him
in December what was more likely to occur. They get rankings for the featherweight division, or they create a 105, what would it be, an atom weight division? Atom weight for females?
What'd he tell you?
He said atom weight is something he's pushing. He didn't answer it directly, but it's just one of those things where it's like, look, they're trying to build a featherweight division. They're trying to build it because they have the greatest female fighter of all time, Amanda Nunes, capable of fighting in that division, and the bantamweight division 135, and she probably prefers to fight at 145, especially now that she's a mother. You know, she doesn't have to worry about dieting all the time, and she loves her food. How can you blame her? I love my food. You love your food.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk about how much I love my food with Eddie.
If you don't love your food, are you really living? So, I mean, food's an important thing for us. So, there it is. So, yeah. UFC 259 is a great loaded card. Fights, we just named them. Which one am I looking forward to the most out of all of them? It's really, really hard to say. I mean, it's so easy to say chalk and say the three title fights, but it's just obviously I want to see those. But I do have some extra juice behind watching Aljamain Sterling and Pewter Jan, two people I really enjoy interviewing. I love this bantamweight division. I think it's one of the most competitive, if not the most competitive division in MMA. And it's just so fun to watch these guys go at it. And it could go in so many different directions. And stylistically, those two are different. And I can't wait to see how it all unfolds.
Yeah, very well said. I completely agree. I'm super excited basically for the entire fight card this weekend. And we do ask Eddie for his main event prediction, which we're about to air here momentarily. And the last thing that I want to say is earlier about the Uber stuff. If you're on the go, you're on the hustle and trying to look for that job, keep up the job search and never give up.
Not at all. I mean, look, we are here because we're grinding and we're willing to go wherever we can to create content every single week. Our Uber driver, to that point, has got to do what he's got to do. And that's what I said to him when he dropped us off. I'm like, look, I don't care at all. I know you got to do. You got to make ends meet. You got to hustle. And that's just the reality behind this. It's in life, there's no handouts. If you want something, you have to take it. You have to grab it. In my darkest days, like, I had to seek so much inspiration. There's so many times back in 2016, 2017, when literally no one knew who I was, right? And no one who's watching or listening to this podcast would even know anything about me or Helen or not even care. Like, we had to go through our struggles to get here, and we still have to fight every single day to remain at the dinner table. So it is what it is. Keep your heads up. Eddie Alvarez.
Let's roll it.
Only fitting for episode 57 with the Underground King to be in an underground room here in New Jersey. Thanks for taking the time.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, we literally flew in just for you. Last night was quite a journey, right?
Yeah, but well worth it. Mid-fight week, UFC 259. But when we have an opportunity to see the Underground King, we see the Underground King.
Yeah, I was shocked. We did a quick little interview, and I'm like, I thought we were going to be here for an hour, something like that. I got a massage book, but I'm like, let's get on. Let's shoot the shit and let's chat.
Let's do it. Yeah, we just did an interview, a Schmo interview, a Helen interview. You might as well get in the podcast too, the Schmo Zone podcast.
Yeah, so like I had a question. I had a question for you, and I'm sure maybe a lot of people wanted answered as well. Because like as a fighter myself, like I also have to switch to another character. I wear a lot of hats. I'm a fighter. I'm a dad. I'm a husband. I'm many things, and I have to continue to compartmentalize and be different people at different times of the day or of the month or whatever it is. I wanted to, like, when I first met you, I think it was in Vegas, we did an interview, and I didn't even know how to take it. I'm like, is this guy, like, is he fucking with me, or like, is he messing with me? I didn't know whether to be defensive at first or be like, get out of here. It was like, kind of threw me back. And then the more I kind of read up on you and watch your interviews, I'm like, oh, he's creating a character. I didn't quite know why, but you know, you off camera, you kind of explained to me what's going on. And I wanted to ask you kind of how difficult is it for you to get in and out of character? Because like, what you guys don't see behind the camera is like, Dave pulls up, I say, hey, what's up, buddy? We shake hands, and he's like this normal guy, and then boom, the camera comes on. He has these glasses on, and he's like turns in this guy, and it's fascinating. It's I respect it. I'm like a little bit inspired by it, and it's something I have to do as a fighter. But like, how difficult is it like for you to do that?
I'm definitely inspired by you, by the way. I just want to put that out there, and people of your nature, just what you do for a living, the utmost respect. So for me to be a character and be the schmo, it's just like, that's the simplest thing on the totem pole. But to your question, there's definitely days where you don't want to do it. You don't want to turn it on. But as you can relate, when someone locks the cage door and you're locked inside and you're staring across another lion who wants to take your head off, I kind of look at the camera that way. When my glasses go on, when those yellow glasses go on, the bright lights are on, I have to perform. It doesn't matter how I'm feeling, if I'm not in the mood or whatever, I don't want to do it. If the lights are on, I have to perform, and that's just the mentality. And I would say that the times where I don't want to do it, it's mostly just to dress. Like, I would rather just be in a t-shirt and sweatpants all day long. Helen knows that. Just to put on the turtleneck, to put on, wear a Rolex,
the
and find
gel.
Different blazers, to just to do up my hair. I have to have the same freaking haircut for the past couple of years nonstop. You know, like a fade, a comb over and everything like that. I'd rather just shave my whole head or just let it grow
really?
Up. And I have done that before. I used to just not care. So, I mean, I'm a very carefree person, and I'm very low maintenance as myself. But as this character, I'm like the polar opposite. So it's nice because I get to be behind a disguise of something else. So I guess throughout all of any of the negatives, which there's barely any, the positives certainly outweigh it.
Yeah. Do you ever see a time where you're like, I want to be on camera and just kind of be Dave. I don't want to put glasses on. I don't want to be the guy. Do you ever see like a transition where you're like, yeah, cool character. I hope it catches fire, but I want to move over to this guy.
Well, I think I have other characters in the works too. If the schmo flops one day, I got other characters. Yeah. But it's crazy too, because you asked that. Like, I only created it, and we talked about this before, because nobody gave me Dave Schmolenson a chance outside of anything, of being a traditional sports guy. And as this thing kind of stuck and took its own, I always thought in the back of my mind, you know, I'll just transition and be myself, and this will just be my way to get my foot in the door. But as this thing has kind of taken off and have a life of its own, I'm just going to ride it out, because I think the schmo is more successful in a way being behind a character than just myself. So I'll ride the wave until it fades. And when it fades, I'll transition to myself or a different character.
Yeah, I like that. And then we all do that, I guess, in a sense. And you enter high school, you're yourself. If it's not working, you kind of adjust. You know, you might wear baggy pants. You might do something a little different that's out of your character per se, but like to kind of fit in and do what people kind of are catching on to or like to do. But like it was unique. And when I asked you that off camera and you said that, like I had more respect for that answer than anything, because it was an honest one at first. And two, like I know how difficult it is to kind of, especially in like a very competitive environment, whether it's media or fighting or whatever you're doing, how to just find a way, how can I be resourceful and find a freaking way, and I'm willing to do whatever it takes, whatever's in boundary and not, and ethical. I'm willing to do whatever it takes, and I respect that.
And going back to the interview you just had with Helen, which I listened to, when basically you're paying out of your pocket just to put on a fight in a gymnasium just to fill 75, 100 people, you're doing it because you look at the big picture, the big investment into what this is. You might be losing right now from your pockets, from your financials now, but the big picture of getting the reps in, getting the notoriety, of building up your resume to see where this sport can bring you, where your future can bring you, like looking at it from the big picture and putting in the work and not skipping steps, the passion, the hard work, there's no substitutions for that. That's what I respect the most about you. And that's why you're still in the sport. That's why you're such a legend. And it all speaks for itself.
Yeah. And that them times were difficult. That was a time, like the time you spoke of when back in 2003, I was still doing concrete work. I was doing concrete work during the day and training at night, and then sometimes doing two-a-days. So I didn't see my wife much. I didn't see my newborn child much. And in fact, when my wife was going to give birth to my first son, Eddie, Dana White called for The Ultimate Fighter. And I was stuck in a dilemma, because you have to be on that show for 6 weeks. You can't talk to your family. You can't use a cell phone. And my wife was my wife's so on board with this fighting thing, and always was, and believed in the movement that I was trying to create, that she was like, go. Like, wow. I was gonna miss the birth of my son to go after an opportunity to be on The Ultimate Fighter and be on that show. And I made it all the way to the last interviews. I went out to Vegas and did all of it. I didn't make the show, thank God. I got to see my son born. And, and the fight gods pushed me another way. But, like, having that relentless kind of mentality to be, like, just to be, like, relentless in your approach for greatness or whatever it is you're trying to do, media, fighting, athletics, friggin' chess, whatever it is.
Chess. Yeah. He loves chess.
So do I, yeah.
We should do that. And chess, by the way.
I have a badass board in my house.
We got to play chess next time. And I didn't even bring this up, too. Helen is training for the 2024 Olympics.
She was a part of the
Olympic trials.
She's got to qualify for the
swimming,
trials.
Yeah.
For swimming?
Swimming, yeah.
You know, I won the show. I went against Justin Gaethje's women. I won the Ultimate Fighter show.
we got to swim next time too.
Our challenge was a half a mile swim. Yeah,
there it is.
They just threw us in and were like, go. You, Justin, you got to swim a half mile. Figure it out. He had no formal training at all. I would YouTube swimming years back because I wanted to learn how to just be able to work out, get back and forth without dying.
Yeah, drowning. It's tough.
So, like, I knew, like, half a mile I would just have to take my time.
Yeah.
and like he went like a bat out of hell and just like gassed and like run that.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, it's like the old man in the pool.
Hey, don't underestimate those men, because some of them, like, they go on forever and they're fast.
When I was training for the half Ironman, it's a 1.2 mile swim. It's just like the old man. It's like, okay, look, I'm half a mile in and it's barely just going. My rhythm is completely off. I don't. It's crazy. Swimming is a beast of a sport.
Yeah, it's amazing. My goal when I swim is to not die.
Yeah.
Like, I have a very low standard when I get in a pool. I'm like, if I don't die here in this half mile, then I'll be good. But that's interesting. Yeah. How long have you been swimming?
Since I was 5. And then it's kind of a crazy story because...
And what event do you do? What's your...
50 free, 100 free. Yeah. So I prefer, like, the longer distance. I'm like, no, because I'll probably die. I like to sprint and then get in, get out. So my former teammate, he was on the Olympics in 2016. We were, like, training partners growing up on my club team. Long story short, when I was 14, I wasn't able to swim any longer. Mm-hmm. I wasn't given a choice. It was like, you're done after Junior Olympics. And I always like strive to get top 3. After not being given a chance to continue swimming, I just swam high school 3 months out of the year, won state my junior year, asked if I could swim any longer because I was getting college scholarships, wanted to go to USC. And I wasn't able to. So then I took over 12 years off, kind of got a bit depressed because being an athlete was my identity, eat, sleep, train. And it does take a mental toll on you. Like, in swimming's a sport where it's like fighting year round. It's not a season, you know? So it's like my mind's always like, okay, next competition, how do I, like, your mind, you have to be obsessed with it. And when I lost my identity, because I thought I would be an athlete forever, I gained weight to 217 pounds.
Wow.
and it was a struggle. He's laughing. He knows how rough, like, losing that weight. He's seen some pics.
And we're talking about Dana White earlier. Dana White saw those pics, I think, a couple months ago, and he was just shocked. That's you.
I mean, I guess I could show you when the cameras are off, the photos, but yeah, so David was like, come on, can you work out, when we first started dating? Because for those 12 years, I was burnt out mentally, physically. And I was like, well, you know, my childhood dream, I mean, if I'm going to train, I want to be great at something. And
you don't want to do it halfway.
No. Exactly. And Olympic trials.
It's not even in your nature.
And I love training. And
so her strict Chinese parents forced her to quit at a young age. So
the first time it's been said on camera. Wow. But that's why. Yeah, it's, I never got a, like, reasoning why. So in the future, and David and I have talked about it, you know, I want to open a foundation to help kids who have dreams to pursue athletics. Yeah. So because it's very rough when you're a child and you have these big dreams and goals, and to have it taken away from you, like, for basically no reason, it's tough.
Yeah, and you don't know how to deal with the emotions of it because you're just not old enough to kind of get through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. Well,
thank you.
Because now
I need
now it's like now you have like an appreciation that like can't really be beat by the other competitors. Like your gratitude that's going to go into it you'll be able to compete at the highest level because of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one other topic conversation, we talked about this before. Just you bringing this up, the juices, the competitive juices, they never really go away. Huge fighter that just retired, Khabib Nurmagomedov, he's out of the sport. You think he's not done, though? You think Khabib's going to come back?
I did. Well, the old adage is all the greats come back. Like, when you think about it, all of them, every single one of them that retired, they came back. Whether it was for money, I don't think for Khabib it's going to be for money. I think it's going to be he needs that. He's been competing all of his life. That it's going to be very difficult to be a person who doesn't compete, especially if someone kind of stokes that ego or stokes that fire for him. And I'm sure someone will. Someone's going to, whether it's these new competitors coming up, maybe they're trying to drag him back in, say something, get him fired up, and they will. So I feel like he comes back. Yeah. Not, I don't think it's going to be the Connor thing, but I think it's going to be for someone.
Yeah, maybe if somebody beats Islam, his teammate.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be. Could be. But all the great, I mean, all the greats come back. And people want to watch them. You know what I mean? People want to watch them. Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, though, what do you think the UFC should do with the lightweight division? Or do they create an interim? Because technically, he's still the champ.
So, like, me kind of knowing the business aspect of the UFC, I feel like when someone makes the company hundreds of millions of dollars, they like the belt being around that person's waist. And they'll keep it there pretty long before they ever take it away. So, like, he has a better shot at keeping that belt and no one else getting it because of the draw and because of the money he could bring the company. If he was just a regular guy with 100,000 followers, this and that, or I'm sorry, the business, you're going to get stripped, you're done, and we're moving on to the next guy. But that's the way the business works. So, like, he has a huge following. He makes the company hundreds of millions of dollars. They're going to keep that belt on him for as long as they can and define him as the champion. And I hope someone else, you know, comes out and emerges a competitor for him.
Well, what about another title fight going on this weekend? Israel moving up to light heavyweight and then fighting Jan. What do you think of him? Well, first, moving up to that division and then also how that fight plays out.
I feel like Jan has a lot of power, but it would be ignorant of us to think that Israel's never fought a guy with a lot of power. He's a technical striker. He's a sniper. And he's fought guys like this and even at a higher level who are better technically than Jan. So, like, can Jan knock out Israel? Yes. I mean, it's an MMA fight. It's 4-ounce gloves. Yes. But I think Israel has fought the similar style 1,000 times already. And he already has the recipe. He already has the know-how to kind of get it done against a guy of his style. He's probably seen this style more times than we've ever seen.
We got a big fight coming up April 7th on TNT, ONE Championship. What would you like to tell all the Underground fans?
Yeah, so thank you guys for following me. Whether you've been around for the 2 decades I've been fighting or for the last 5 years, I just try to keep my fights always the same, high-paced, violent, and try to show you guys something that you're not able to see on the rest of the fights on the card. Am I interested in winning? Yes, but I'm more interested in being as violent as possible and you guys enjoying your night and the entertainment that you get from it.
He's Eddie Alvarez. This is episode 57 of the Schmozone Podcast. We are out.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.